everyone. This is your host and producer, Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we are delighted to have you along for another episode in our Treat Addiction series. Today, we'll be discussing three substances that you may not be aware of that can be very addictive and give you some background information on how to deal with them as well. Should you feel that there might be an issue that you have with gabapentin, kratom, or xylazine, we suggest that you contact your primary care provider and have them refer you to an addiction specialist so they can create a treatment plan specifically for you or your loved one. I wanted to talk a little bit about the addicted brain. We've talked about it before, but a little refresher is always good. Due to substance and alcohol use, the receptors in the addicted brain undergo changes in both structure and function. And studies show that with treatment, the receptors tend to normalize. So they become the way that they should be working. And this normalization of receptor structure and function helps to reduce cravings and the behavior associated with addiction. But when people take or are prescribed taking addictive substances like benzodiazepines, Adderall, which is amphetamines, gabapentin and others, this healing of the brain is prevented.
And I think it's important too that our listeners understand that it is not the medications themselves that is the problem, but rather their misuse. Their misuse, because we have people who have anxiety, they have ADHD, they have neuropathy, they have many reasons why they need the medications. But for the person who has an addiction issue or substance use disorder, it takes several years for these patients to learn and master the behaviors and coping mechanisms that would prevent relapse. So it's important for them to be aware of what they're taking, because with any small or big stressor, the individual tends to reach back for something to use as a crutch, whether it's drugs or alcohol or other behaviors like gambling or other addictions. So be aware and ask questions and try to use your support. Because there are patients when they have these thoughts of relapse and it creeps in very subtly, they will present to their providers and they will present a list of symptoms from the DSM that shows that they have panic symptoms. And I put that in air quotes for those who can't see me. Or they'll list symptoms as if they have ADHD. Or with the primary care doctor, they'll go and list symptoms of neuropathy because they know. They read Google MD. They'll find symptoms. But as physicians, especially in psychiatry, we have to use good clinical acumen as we prescribe certain medications, because some of these medications can be big obstacles to the road to recovery.
So we'll start with gabapentin. It is an anticonvulsant and was started for its use in the treatment of seizures and post-herpetic neuralgia, that terrible, terrible pain that people get, and the reason why the shingles vaccine is a very, very good idea. And these two reasons are the only official recommendations, FDA recommendation, for using gabapentin. All its other uses are off-label, particularly its use in anxiety disorders and other neuropathy. And I totally admit that it works really, really well. But to illustrate its abuse or misuse, it has euphoric effects. It produces a sense of relaxation, sedation, euphoria, especially at high doses. And the part that we struggle with is because it potentiates or enhances the effects of other substances like opioids, benzodiazepines, and alcohol, increasing the risk of overdose death. And another thing that people who abuse gabapentin do is that the normal range is still pretty huge, 300 milligrams to 3,600 milligrams. But people who abuse gabapentin use even higher than this range. And the reason that it's addicting is manifested by the withdrawal that people go through when it is suddenly stopped. They go through symptoms like benzodiazepine withdrawal, like anxiety, agitation, tremors, and sweating.
You know, personally in my practice, I have quite a few people on gabapentin for anxiety, for mood stabilization. And for some people, I have a few who are developmentally delayed with agitation and discontrol of behaviors. It works beautifully. But the reality is there are many non-prescription use of this product, often illegally obtained, whether it's from doctor shopping, fraud, and just plain theft. These do occur with this medication, but it's a beautiful product when used appropriately. Especially they found that in the prison system, it's highly misused. I had a brief stint in jail, but not me. I was not in jail.
That's a part of you that I did not know about, Ketley. Okay.
I was providing services down there for the psychiatric needs of some of the inmates. And there are other medications that's also abused in addition to the gabapentin, including Seroquel, which is a beautiful drug for so many things, but also abused. Trazodone, wonderful sleep aid. It's an antidepressant that they also misuse. But the gabapentin is known in the street names under Gabbies or Johnnies, and can be found in the black market. And even, I remember several years ago, when it became a controlled substance in Michigan, because I have many patients who come from Michigan. And although we can prescribe it electronically in Ohio, but in Michigan it's controlled. Kentucky, Tennessee, they've found them, they've relabeled them, reclassified them as controlled substances. And as healthcare providers, we have to be cautious as we prescribe these medications, just like we would be cautious in prescribing benzodiazepine,
right,
or any other like stimulants. It's ubiquitous, I promise you. Since the pandemic, I have so many patients with ADHD, but my standard office procedure is to refer them all out for testing.
Correct.
I can take a clinical history, I can make a diagnosis, but to have a secondary set of eyes is the best way I approach it to prevent having this issue with those who can also read the DSM and tell me, I have this, I have this,
exactly.
I have this, I have that.
Yeah, with it available on MD Google all over the place.
All over the place.
Statistics really help for us to understand the extent of this situation. So there was a study that was done that misuse, abuse, and diversion of gabapentin occurs in about 1% of the general population, which is quite huge, and translates to 3.4 million people. That's quite a lot.
Quite a lot.
And 65% of these individuals got them as prescriptions. And it reminds me of the time of a patient, this is many years ago, easily 15. She was 88 at the time, had chronic pain, was on OxyContin. And somewhere along the way, she also was given gabapentin. And she came to me that way. And when someone comes to you in that with that combination, it's not that easy to just slash things. So she would refer to her gabapentin as my Gabby Girls. And that's why I was inspired to make the title of this Gabby and Company. Because even she noticed, you know, an 88-year-old, because obviously it does not, it crosses the lines of age. Substances do. So the potentiation of the high is really quite real. And 22% in this study abused opioids in addition to using the gabapentin. So, and this was manifested in a recent episode in a Toledo residential facility dealing with addiction, that someone was already on an opioid, methadone, and was given gabapentin by someone else, and they lost consciousness. And the problem obviously is that when you give Narcan to someone like that, it'll respond, the methadone will respond, but the gabapentin will not. So the sedation produced by gabapentin did not respond. He had to be taken to the ER, and he was also admitted. So this is a very, very important thing to remember, that this is how damaging it can be.
And I think those who are listening to this episode should be aware that we're not saying you cannot be and you should not take gabapentin. We're saying to be aware, and especially if you have a history of addiction.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Be very, very aware. So what about kratom? The first time I heard that, I think, oh, what is that?
What be that?
What be that? Well, it's an herbal substance derived from the leaves of the Mitragyna speciosa tree, native to Southeast Asia. While it has been used traditionally for its stimulant and pain-relieving properties, its increasing popularity in the U.S. has raised concerns about abuse, dependence, and addiction related to it. Kratom itself contains alkaloids, primarily mitragynine and 7-hydroxymitragynine, which interacts with opioid receptors in the brain. Its effect varies depending on the dosage, and you know if you have an issue with dependence, more is always better.
Yes,
more is
indeed.
Always better.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Low doses can increase energy, alertness, sociability. Moderate doses can cause sedation, pain relief, and euphoria, whereas very high doses can lead to severe sedation in addition to nausea and potential overdose. I remember we talked about an article I read years ago about a product in the narcotics family that caused necrosis of the skin and severe sedation. And one of the individuals that was interviewed, his reaction was, damn, it must be some good stuff.
Yes, you know, that's always the way.
And it doesn't scare people
doesn't
when these
scare
things.
Them. Because the high is so intense.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there are, because kratom is not really well known, some signs of the chronic use of what chronic use of kratom can do. It can cause behavioral changes like loss of interest in hobbies, neglect of responsibilities and cravings, nausea, sweating, weight loss, constipation, and a lot of mood swings, anxiety, depression. And the withdrawal is there, so that tells you that it is addicting because of the withdrawal. So there's irritability, muscle pain, insomnia, and diarrhea. And this kratom is widely available, obviously, mm-hmm. without a prescription.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's why it's the accessibility issue is there, and that's why it's abused. And the risks and dangers of it are it can lead to tolerance and withdrawal. Anxiety, depression, and important piece, psychosis can occur in some cases. There's liver toxicity with long-term use. It's very dangerous. People use kratom to get off of opioids, and it is like going from the frying pan into the fire
mm-hmm.
because kratom at high doses works like an opioid. And the overdose risk is there, leading to respiratory depression and coma, and this also would not directly respond to Narcan.
Narcan. You know, and I've said this before, you don't know what you don't know until you know it. And so many people, they'll try something different thinking this is less problematic,
yes.
but find out that, oh my goodness, I am into the fire. Yeah. So treatment and recovery, what does that look like? It is a very, very challenging process to get someone off of this product. There's no real FDA-approved treatment as far as medications are concerned. So we have to use symptom-specific. So similarly to even opioids and other substances, if you have aches, if you have pains, if you have nausea, if you have diarrhea, if you have constipation, we can treat symptoms of the withdrawal. But also, we always recommend cognitive behavioral therapy, group management, anything that we can to add to your aid in getting off this product. But gradually weaning off and managing the symptoms is your best option. There's a little brief anecdote I wanted to share about someone who started using kratom thinking that it would help her anxiety. And initially, she found it very therapeutic. She felt better. She felt amazing. She felt more energized, focused, social. But over time, she found that she needed more to get the same effect. And I think by definition, our audience
right
know
there.
Now what that
addiction.
Is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Addiction.
Right.
And before she knew it, she was drinking kratom, the tea, several times a day. And if she skipped a dose, she would become restless and she would feel chills and horrible anxiety. And it took over a year for her to realize that she was literally addicted to this product. And quitting was, as she called it, brutal. The withdrawal felt like a mix of opioid and caffeine withdrawal rolled up in one, and it took weeks for her to feel normal again.
It almost feels like you're going through it yourself. It's so vivid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A terrible product that's really invaded the black market is xylazine.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a veterinary sedative?
Yes.
Not approved for human use. It's commonly used in animals as a muscle relaxant and painkiller. And now we are finding it in illicit drug supplies, especially when mixed with opioids like fentanyl. It really potentiates the opioids. And on the streets, it's sometimes called trank or trank dope. It acts as a central nervous system depressant, similar to opioids, but without being an opioid itself. And it causes sedation, drowsiness, slowed breathing and heart rate, low blood pressure, and euphoria when it's mixed with opioids particularly. And this is the part that is like a bad sci-fi movie, severe skin ulcers and necrosis. Wow. It's like waking up from your high and seeing that what the heck happened here, also called tranq wounds. And it's addictive because it causes tolerance, dependence, and withdrawal.
I was thinking of someone I saw this week, a very dear woman at the office, and she is definitely in love with her cannabis. But she discovered that it was causing her to have the hyperemesis syndrome, and she was so unhappy. She said, what am I going to do? I like this. She said,
hyperemesis is really so typical of cannabis.
Yeah, she likes it. And so even though these individuals will have these symptoms, they like the benefit, and it outweighs the negative for them.
Yeah.
So why is this so dangerous? But hopefully this will stick for someone as they listen to these. The overdose risk is significant, causing respiratory depression. And if you have no one around, as you are unresponsive, you know what happens. And Narcan does not help for it. It does not help for it. And the severe skin damage that can occur, chronic use of it can lead to these large, deep wounds and tissue necrosis, just awful things. And the withdrawal symptoms are severe, with agitation, anxiety, sweating, high blood pressure, and severe cravings, making it very, very difficult to go through without some medical supervision.
And imagine you're taking a drug for the euphoria, and the tissue necrosis can result in amputations.
Yeah.
So what are the signs of a xylazine addiction? Frequent sedation or passing out, and the visible skin wounds and infections. Increased tolerance, cravings, and mixing it with opioids to enhance the effects, and having withdrawal symptoms. And the treatment for xylazine addiction, we don't have a medication like Suboxone is to opioids. We would have to do a medical detox, which can be extremely painful and difficult. Mm-hmm. Then, since there are no FDA-approved medications that specifically treat xylazine addiction. And then we can do inpatient or outpatient rehab with cognitive behavioral therapy, group therapy, peer support, like your 12-step program. Mm-hmm. And wound care and harm reduction. If someone is using xylazine, as soon as they develop a wound, they need to get medical attention. Otherwise, that sci-fi movie will come true and there will be amputation.
Wow. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And hopefully this will make an impression on someone. I wanted to share an anecdote, and I'm going to read it from the writer's voice so you can see what she experienced. She said, I never set out to use xylazine. I was addicted to heroin and fentanyl. And at some point, the supply started changing. The high felt different, stronger, but also scarier. I would black out for hours, sometimes waking up on the sidewalk, not knowing what had happened. My arms and legs started getting these weird wounds that wouldn't heal, even though I wasn't injecting anywhere near them. I thought it was just bad hygiene. But then the sores got worse, deep, blackened, and painful. A nurse at a harm reduction center told me it was xylazine. Tranq dose, she said. That's when I realized I was hooked on something even worse than the fentanyl. When I tried to quit, the withdrawal was unbearable, worse than anything I had felt before. It wasn't just the opioid withdrawal. I had panic attacks. My body felt like it was shutting down, and I couldn't sleep for days. I finally got into a detox program, but even they weren't sure how to treat xylazine withdrawal because Narcan didn't help, and there was no real medication for it. It took weeks to start feeling normal again. Some of my friends, they never got that chance.
Yeah, that's the sad part. Mm-hmm. That they say. And we notice during treatment of patients on methadone and Suboxone that they generally are out of the system, like buprenorphine is out in 3 days and methadone longer. But if xylazine is used in combination, the opioid stays for the longest time. They just are not able to clear it. It really gets potentiated. Wanted to just do, before we end, a quick review of commonly abused and diverted drugs. We've done an episode on prescription stimulants like amphetamines, which are used for ADHD and narcolepsy, prescription opioids and non-prescription opioids, obviously, like fentanyl and methadone and heroin, benzodiazepines like Xanax, Valium, Ativan. And important to remember, non-benzodiazepine sedatives, like people think that Ambien, Lunesta, and Sonata are not addicting, but they are. Mm-hmm. Muscle relaxants like Soma and Flexeril are quite addicting, or abused, rather. Mm-hmm. Anticonvulsant and neuropathic pain medications, we just talked about gabapentin, but its sister, Lyrica. Over-the-counter medications like dextromethorphan, which is a cough medicine, pseudoephedrine, which is in cold medicines. And anabolic steroids, just for our audience to know, that testosterone and its derivatives are very misused and abused. And people are well aware of ketamine, PCP, LSD, and magic mushrooms, which we did episodes on. And synthetic and designer drugs and cannabinoids like K2 and spice, and cathinones like bath salts and flak. So there's a vast array of substances that can be abused and diverted.
There was a good episode of one of the many Star Treks that I've seen over the years. I'm a Star Trek fan, I admit it. I love Star Trek. But on this one episode, this Ferengi, I remember the name of Ferengi, went back in time to our time. And he was talking to someone who was addicted to something. I forgot what the thing was. And he said, so tell me, they know this is not good for them, right? Yeah. They know these bad things can happen because of this, right? Yep. And they still pay money for it and they still do it? They said, yep. He said, oh, I'm going to love this place. And, you know, and I say it to say that in spite of education, in spite of all the information that's out there, in spite of just what you've shared, they're still going to do it. There's that population that will not heed the recommendations.
Until you get to the point in which you are ready for recovery.
Right.
And that tipping point happens if the person is fortunate.
How many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? I know the answer.
Every single episode.
I know. But so in conclusion, we know that GABA should be prescribed by a physician and tried only when non-addictive medications do not work for the individual. But if you're on it and it's monitored and it's helping you, we're not saying you have to stop it. We're just saying make sure you are in the care of a good provider. Kratom, while kratom has potential medicinal use, its abuse can lead to serious consequences. If you or someone you know is struggling with it, seeking professional guidance is your best course of action. Xylazine, I still don't get it, because remember we said earlier, Dr. Islam mentioned that this is a product for veterinary use. That should give you a clue that it's not for human consumption.
Not for human consumption.
No, it's a very dangerous drug because of its severe addictive properties, as well as the significant damage it can cause to the human body.
And it's interesting, patients will say, particularly about marijuana, that, you know, it works so well and it's natural. And I tell them that, you know, medicine has evolved and it is such a fabulous science that we have medications that have been tried, true, and tested and researched, and we have studies on for decades. So it's not as though you have no choices. You're just making a very bad, substandard, damaging choice.
Right.
So it really is a matter of whether the patient gets it. We really do hope that you enjoyed this episode, and our next episode will deal with exercise addiction as well as perhaps eating disorders. And we really hope you will join us. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Kathy Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Do share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that drug use causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with all the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. We hope to see you soon.
WGTE, voices around us. WDTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.